You are now listening to Bullhook Golf, an unfiltered golf podcast taking you inside the ropes with unfiltered stories, insights, analysis, and exclusive interviews. Welcome back, everybody, to Bullhook Golf, the podcast. This is episode number 84, the Ryder Cup rundown that just concluded. So my name's Matt Cook. We've got PGA Tour caddy legend who caddies for SH Kim, Mr. Bobby Brown. And Bobby, tonight we've got a great episode to where it doesn't get much better than the Ryder Cup, but being able to do a little, well, we'll call it Tuesday evening quarterbacking here, not the Monday morning, but Tuesday evening quarterback. And this is going to be fun to break it all down. Let's get into it right off the bat because we're going to be talking about the Ryder Cup. We're going to recap that. We're going to get into all of the drama that went on. And then also we're going to talk about where you're at this week, which is the Sanderson Farms Championship. And then we've got a little Korean news as well towards the end of the episode. So we'll hit upon all of this, but let's kick it off with the Ryder Cup rundown. First of all, what was your take on this year's Ryder Cup in terms of Europe beating the U.S. that badly, which it could have been much worse?
Yeah, it could have been much worse. I mean, it was in a word, disappointing. I mean, extremely disappointing to I will say this, Matt. I woke up 1:30 every morning. Turned it on. Well, actually, you know, turned it on at one. I shouldn't say I woke up because I like really never went to sleep. So I watched every minute you could possibly watch. But I will take you back to when they announced the first session teams for Friday morning. And I immediately mumbled myself, we're going to be down three points or 4 points immediately. I couldn't believe who we sent out early. Listen, I'm not talking shit about Zach. I'm no captain or anything like that. But you got an away game. You got to send out your horses first, right? Shit about you know, Patrick Reed wasn't at Westling Straits, DeChambeau was, but you know, and DeChambeau obviously won the second live event way too late once the teams were already picked, so everybody can shut up about that. You know, rules are rules, but why don't you send out Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka in the very first match? You send out your, we didn't have very many horses other than Max, you know, but you send out your horses and you send out your horses first and try and get some points, not this. You know, Scottie Scheffler and his best friend Sam Burns, and I was very and I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked at the first.
I knew we were in trouble. Pairings. I was with you. I saw those pairings come out for Friday morning, and I'm sitting there going, "Oh shit, we have some trouble in paradise because one, Scottie Scheffler and Sam Burns have not played well together, and."
They got skunked at the President's Cup, right? Yeah. Didn't they get skunked?
They did not. Yeah, they play well together. So it's like, why run them out there? I get the whole pods and all this stuff in terms of grouping people together. And, you know, Scottie Scheffler and Sam Burns are best friends, but their games do not mesh well together as a team. And that's where, what are you doing? And then you're sending out two rookies. You're putting out Brian Harman and Max Homa in that second group. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, you throw those rookies out in the second session, right? Once everything started and they're a little bit more comfortable and they've, you know, maybe walked a few holes with the team and rooted them on and seen what they're in for and that kind of stuff. But my quote to myself was literally, what the fuck is he doing? What the fuck is he doing? And it's not him making that. It's just not his decision to make. I mean, Fred's in his ear, Strick's in his ear. Furyk's in his ear, Sink's in his ear. You know, they think about these kind of things and they consult each other before they make these kind of things. But man, I felt like before we were in a big hole. I felt like we were going to be in a big hole, and I was right, 4-0. And it's tough to come. It's almost impossible to come back from that, as that was proved. You know, so it was just very disappointing.
Well, was he listening to his assistant captains? Because Freddie Couples had another great one talking about how Oh gosh, what was the second quote that he had, saying that somebody was going to play in every single one of the matches? Oh shoot, I forget.
Well, he was doing that walk and talk. He was doing a walk and talk with John Wood, and he didn't say every single match. He said four matches. Remember, so that's 4 out of 5. That's 4 out of 5 matches. But
who
you
was
know,
it that he was
you get
talking
somebody
about?
like Dustin. I think he was talking about two or three different guys, wasn't he? I think he was. He's with John Wood, and I think he's really great. And he, as far as older caddies that have done a ton of Ryder Cups, that's like everything for John Wood, the Ryder Cup. He'd surrender all the wins that he'd have on the bag to be on winning Ryder Cup team. So he's very patriotic in that way, and he's very, you know, enthused, let's say. But man, I was just bummed.
Well, on the flip side,
I was just bummed.
On the flip side, with Luke Donald as captain, I was super impressed with him. I love the strategy that he put together where he paired the rookies with the best guys.
Yeah, of course he did. He paired a rookie with rookie. I have to apologize. I was kind of calling Bobby McIntyre the weak link out there, and on paper he was the weak link, but you put him with a guy with Justin Roses, who this is old hat to, so to speak, and he's mentoring him and making him feel comfortable as he goes along. But I'm just going to start with Luke Donald's speech at the opening ceremonies. It just blew me away. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Camilo Vijay. Camilo and Luke are best friends, and Camilo's playing this week where we are here in Jackson, Mississippi. And Camilo was telling me that Luke learned Italian in the last couple months so he could make that speech. And he was reading all kinds of strategy books and, you know, this and that. He said that Luke read something like 25 to 35 books in the last year to get ready for this thing. So, A++ for him.
He crushed it.
You know, and he's,
the partnership that I loved the most was actually Hovland and Oberg. Those two, the hottest golfer in the world right now, in terms of he's playing the best out of everybody, Victor Hovland. And then you got Oberg, which is the new guy in town, the one that was the big question mark. So there's a ton of pressure up against him. Yeah. And you just let Hovland go ahead and take all that pressure and literally ease this kid into the Ryder Cup. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. Everything he did was brilliant. I mean, you could summarize it and say they just played better, and then they kicked our ass. I mean, that's pretty much the bottom line. They just played better. They kicked our ass. They had the home court, home field advantage, whatever you want to say. But it was very disappointing. Like I said, I can't say it enough. His first morning session picks, the foursome picks, which historically we have played pretty decent in, you know, and four ball wasn't always our specialty, but it was, you know, I'm still a little bit surprised that it was the way it was. I mean, obviously there was 45 minutes or 30 minutes there where, you know, those red flags started going up, and those matches could have gone either way. But man, it's so funny now that we can sit and I can me and you can armchair quarterback with the best of them, right? That's what we do. But you know, I'm in shell shock over our United States social media people, Dan Rappaport, Dylan Dethier, all these guys. I mean, they shit on our guys more than the European press shits on our guys, and that just disgusts me. You know, I know that's what they're paid to do and everything like that, but you know, part of me still thinks that, you know, if you're American, you're rooting for the Americans. You know, but I just feel like they didn't need to go where they went all the time, you know? I mean, maybe that's a problem with our country anyways right now. I don't know. I mean, I might be talking a little bit out of my ass right there, but I was thoroughly disgusted with our social media people that cover golf. You know, anything to get clicks, I guess, right,
that's
Matt?
True. Clickbait or whatever. That is, I mean, that's the social media world, right? Is you're trying to say the most outrageous things in order to get social media clicks. You're doing it for these, like, less than a minute clips, and then you're doing it for X or Twitter. So that is one of the things you certainly see as you go on. And by the way, I did forget to mention our show sponsor, which I'll put it in afterwards, but I am wearing the Dante hat today. And you started talking about, you know, some of these guys that are over there covering the sport, and like a Dan Rappaport, for instance, and just absolutely shelling on the United States. Well, this Dante hat, this is the ayahuasca / bufo experience, the toad venom hat, where it's got all the crazy stuff all over it. It's got mushrooms on here with eyeballs. Great hat. Absolutely love this hat. But that being said, there was no relationship between Dan Rappaport and this hat, but I just wanted to tie those in together and really distract from what ended up being a pretty big bashing by the media of the U.S. team. And then I've got the Ivy hoodie on. I'm going to get you one of these, Bobby, because
I like those. I like
this
it.
One
like
is it. Really sharp. I mean, this is, I think they have 58 reviews on this Ivy hoodie that are all 5 stars. So definitely go on, everybody. Use PullHookGolf25 as your promo code. And that will certainly get you 25% off your entire order at swanies.co. There's the little plug for Swanies. But that going back to the Ryder Cup, there was some controversy that took place out there, Bobby. And I want to start off with, I mean, this season was all about caddies, and you and I have talked about caddies a lot. And there was one big moment that, unless you were living underneath a rock, I love that saying, but unless you were living underneath a rock, you saw the incident that took place with Joe LaCava and Rory McIlroy. What are your thoughts on that situation?
I mean, I know I've stayed with Joe numerous times. I know Joe very, 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 very well. And so all I can tell you is something had to happen that we don't know about. Something had to happen because he is a very low-key individual, and let me just say this: he's from kind of your neck of the woods in Connecticut. I nickname him Guido, right? Because he's a Guido. He's an absolute Guido. And when he has an opinion on something, he'll let you know. But he's very calm about his approach and how he addresses certain things that he doesn't agree with. So something happened that day that set him off, and he just couldn't take it anymore. And he was, you know. I got a question for you. Over or under 25 times you rewatched that video?
Over
or under? I must have been 100. I wanted to see every single angle. You know, some of the angles I saw, it looked bad, right? It looked bad, like he shouldn't have done it. And then I saw some pan shots, some other angles and that kind of stuff. And I technically don't think he ever stepped in Rory's line, to be
quite honest.
He
wasn't in his line. He was just close to Rory. And
yeah, he was very So, and hey, listen, that thing is kill or be killed, that whole event, right? And so, you know, Rory could have said something or could have done something.
I think Rory did, because there was at one point, so Joe was a little ways away from Rory, and Rory was walking behind him.
Yeah.
And it looked like, because Joe turned.
Oh, no, I meant back up. I meant earlier in the round, Rory could have said something to stir something, might have stirred something up. Because I guess for the people that live under a rock need to know that, you know, Patrick, there was a bunch of rumors going. The deal was is that Patrick was getting extremely harassed for not wearing the hat, right? And then Jamie Ware breaks out this story that I've talked to a lot of people that has no merit and no truth whatsoever, probably 6 million clicks or whatever it is, saying that there was a big beef and there was some division inside the team room because they weren't getting paid. Him and Xander were bitching about not getting paid, and that's why he didn't wear the hat. But the fact is that, you know, people are going to say, oh, the hat didn't fit and that kind of stuff. If you know anything, well, Patrick said that. If you know anything about Patrick, he is a very anal guy. You know what I mean? If a hat doesn't fit perfectly or doesn't fit right, he's not going to wear it. And he had the same problem at Whistling Straits. So my point is that, you know, the fans, the European fans, ran with that and were harassing him all day. And maybe that's what set Joe off, honestly,
I think so.
To tell you the truth.
I do.
You know, I think that's what it was. But the one video, I saw a video just here in the last hour of a pan shot, like a ground shot. And, you know, there was more space on this video than it looked like on other videos from, you know, Joe's a badass, right? Joe's an absolute.
Shane Lowry realized that in a hurry.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, you know, Shane Lowry likes to drink and party, and he, you know, Northern Ireland guy, Irish guys are tough and that kind of stuff. But I don't think Shane would want any part of Guido, to tell you the truth. And Guido looked like he was ready to throw if it came.
He had some intense eyes, and then you see Shane Lowry being like, hang on.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, listen, Joe was obviously, you know, upset about something. He was trying to stir up the crowd. He had probably had enough. And this is a very emotional, passionate event, you know, and it was just like, forget that them thrashing us. That to me was like the big news. That was like the whole Ryder Cup, Joe doing something like that. And Joe's not afraid to express his opinion and tell, you know, and tell people what he thinks about something, you know. And I think after this happened, I think Zach pretty much put the clamps on him and said, hey, you're not going to comment on this. We're going to go out there and play golf on Sunday, and we're just going to let this be. And I can hardly wait to, you know, I'm not going to see Joe for a while, and I sure don't want to be the one, because I'm sure there's a million people. If you know Joe, you're not going to text him, go, bro, give me the scoop. What happened? You know, he's not going to answer that. But, you know, I'm sure it's funny. We don't have the strongest field here this week in Jackson, Mississippi. You know, so there's nobody there that was on campus that could give me any kind of information. And God knows I tried to get some information out of some guys, and John Wood, who was there doing the commentating and that kind of stuff. But John Wood's like, hey, I don't really feel comfortable saying, you know, him and Joe are best buddies. I don't really feel comfortable speaking for Joe, but I'm going to try and get to the bottom of it here in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And hopefully we can revisit it and go back on that. But, you know, I'll tell you, I was shocked. I mean, I felt like he did overstep his boundaries, honestly, to tell you the truth. I do know Rory enough to know that, you know, he can be a little bitch, to be honest with you. And most of those guys can be. But I was a little shocked that it went as far as it went. And then when Joe went to the back of the green, he started mouthing back to Lowry and Rose and Justin Rose. You know, he had a look that I've never seen in Joe LaCava's eyes ever before, you know. And then obviously that thing escalated into the parking lot, and I feel like,
how about that? The Golf Channel cameras being live and in the parking lot was perfect.
Yeah, perfect time. And Bonesy's like the great mediator with everybody, right? He doesn't like conflict. He tries to calm everybody down and get their wits about themselves, you know. And I felt like Rory was playing badass because Lowry was there. You know, if Lowry wasn't standing right there, I don't know if Rory would have fired at him and that kind of stuff. But it didn't, you know, it didn't look, maybe I'm wrong, but in my opinion, it didn't look very classy on Rory's part to have a go at Bones over something like that, when Bones was probably trying to just calm everything
down. So I also watched that one like 30, 40 times. And me too. Here's the thing. Yeah, I don't, it didn't look like he was yelling at Bones. Looked like he was yelling to somebody to the left of Bones and in that wasn't in the picture.
Yeah.
Which might have been LaCava.
Yeah. It might have been. That's what you would assume, right? But you got to remember this too. There's a longer bit. Did you see the longer video that when the camera went to Bones and he walked around the sidewalk to his car?
No,
did you happen
to
see that one? There was no LaCava in sight. So I think my theory is that maybe Bones approached him and said, hey man, everything's good. And he was trying to put out a little bit of a smoldering fire or something like that. And then Rory teed off on him, because I watched that Pancha, the other video of Bones walking away. And you know, you got to understand that Bones and Joe are very close, right? They are the two most successful caddies of all time, you know, in PGA Tour history. And they're very close, and they stay together quite a bit, and they josh each other quite a bit, joke around and fuck around and that kind of stuff, you know. So I think Bones was getting Joe's back. And remember I was telling you, You know, those old school caddies are very protective of their players.
Like bodyguards.
Right? There you go. We talked about that with Bonesy in Napa, and that's how those older school caddies are. They are very protective of their players for obvious reasons. You know, they don't want anybody getting close. They don't want anybody saying anything that will distract them from hitting a golf shot or whatever they're doing. Autograph seekers or. You know, anything like that. They're a different breed. Those old school guys are very, very protective, and they're very tough. You know, they're very tough on people, and they're very tough on the crowds when they get a little bit out of hand. So, man, that was like the whole deal to me. I honestly couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I was, I was shocked, to tell you the truth. I was, you know, I read a bunch of social media stuff, and people are just shelling. It's funny, the people that, you know, that are American press that are, they're shelling Joe, that man, you would have to be standing on that green or standing in with that group for 18 holes to figure out, to know why Joe was set up. But my instinct just tells me that something bad happened out there, and Joe just snapped, and he just couldn't take it anymore. So hopefully I'll get some more information on something like that. But it sure as hell made a kind of a dead Ryder Cup extremely
really
exciting.
Did. I mean, it added some life to it, because otherwise it was absolutely just a debacle from the U.S. side. Now, talking about Joe LeCav and his guy, Patrick Cantlay, I mean, there was nobody as clutch. Now, a quick word from our sponsor. Swannies is here with a fresh take. Performance-based materials are a given these days. But if you're looking for the stretchiest and most lightweight pieces that deliver a look that says, I'm here for a good time, take a walk on the Swannies side. With fabric sourced from recycled plastics and designs sourced from our very own weekend warriors, Swannies is looking out for both our planet and those that need a little style to boost their drive another 15 yards. Premium looks from top to bottom at swannies.co. I would even go on a limb and say there wasn't anybody even on the European side that was as clutch as Patrick Cantlay was. I mean, did you watch the match with him and Justin Rose, the one-on-one match?
I don't know if I saw bits of, you know, I saw bits and pieces, you know, waking up super early and watching everything. I would you know, doze off or go do something else, but I didn't happen to really watch any singular match. I mean, let's be honest, the coverage was pathetic, to say the least, with the commercials and everything like that. But I'm pretty sure that was not necessarily an NBC feed. I feel like that was a world feed.
Yeah, true.
You know, and then NBC didn't really control what was happening. What did you see in that? What did you think about that?
Well, the thing is, like, Cantlay was playing phenomenal golf, and Justin Rose just never went away. And every time it looked like Patrick Cantlay was going to get two or three up in the match, Justin Rose made a huge putter, a huge shot, and just never went away. And Cantlay never blinked, though. Like, he stayed the entire way through.
And that's him. He's that's Patrick Cantlay to a T right there. And, you know, and Justin Rose went 1-1-1, 1.5 points. Which is nothing on paper spectacular, but the putts that he did make when he had to make them, that was spectacular, and that's how you dominate a Ryder Cup. And hey, listen, I'm gonna give my I like Rosie. He's a super nice, polite guy. He does a lot for charity. He does a lot for women's golf. You know, him and his wife started a tour that's like a notch below what a Korn Ferry tour would be for us to get women started. You know, and he's just the nicest, classiest guy. But what I really like about him is that he's 43 years old, and when it hits, all his mates and his whole crew took the money and went to live. He was the one guy that stepped up and said, I am playing golf to play in major championships and to make this Ryder Cup team. And he did it, and I am so stoked that he did something like that. And instead of taking man, he would have got $100 million, $60, $80, $100 million too. I mean, he's a huge draw. And honestly, Justin Rose, the way he plays golf, if you put him on the LIV Tour, he's actually maybe a guy that can win two or three times. You know, to me, I still think he has, I know he went a little bit of slump for a couple years, you know, but he has officially been back for quite a bit after last year to me. So I was super stoked to see him do something like that. And you know, he's been there before. He relishes those big time situations. I mean, for God's sake, he's a major winner that's been on numerous Ryder Cup teams, and he just did a fantastic job.
Pick.
And like, yeah, what a pick. I mean, their captain's picks were so much better than our captain's picks. And I got to apologize to Bobby McIntyre, to McIntyre again, because he went for 2.5 points. Jesus, he didn't lose a match. He went 2-0-1, you know, and I was reading that he was basically in tears walking to the first tee, the very first match that
he
played.
So nervous.
Hats, Hats off to him too. I mean, honestly, hats off to the whole. I ran into Ludwig's caddy. Ludwig's playing this week. I was shocked too. And Højgaard was in the field, and he pulled out a couple days ago too. But I ran right into Ludwig's caddy coming out of caddy dining this afternoon, and I'm like, man, that had to be exciting. He's like, man, I've never experienced anything like that in my life. And you know, once the dust is settled and everything like that, everybody's cool with each other, and it's, you know, congratulate, you know, I have no problem congratulating a European W, but I didn't get any scoop on that party afterwards, but I don't think it was as good
as. Hang
on
a second. Did you see? All right. So talking about the party, Terrell Hatton.
Yeah.
3 a.m.
Yeah.
With the sun, yeah. With the glasses on.
Yeah.
You know that there was some extracurricular performance enhancing drugs that were.
I don't know.
Not drinking Red Bull vodkas, and to be up until 3 a.m. That is not an easy feat to pull off.
You know those Europeans can drink us under the table.
Not after a full day and a stressful day at that.
Adrenaline, bro. Adrenaline, man. Let me set this record straight. I do not see Terrell Hatton chalking up a big gagger. I just don't know how else to say it. I'm not saying it's 100% couldn't happen, but I just don't see.
I see Terrell Hatton as just a party animal. He's got that, and he's got the anger to go along with it. You know what I mean? So
yeah, he does.
This is pure speculation, by the way. There's no inside scoop here whatsoever.
Man, it's funny. I'm looking down the team list of every team right now, and I'm like, man, if anybody did powder on these teams, there's one or two I can think of, and they don't come off the European team. They come off the American team.
I got you.
Well, there was no Dustin wasn't on the team, so there was no supply.
Yeah, that's a good point. But they were in Italy, so you never know. That said, Hatton played his ass off.
Yeah.
I was actually shocked that you picked him as your pick.
I did,
and I felt like that was an insider pick right there, folks, because you knew Bobby, but I didn't see him as this great match play player who was going to be a team guy and all this. And then I was completely wrong. I'll be the first one to admit that after the first day, I was like, oh crap. Like, and he was getting paired with Victor, in that second, in the second group, which I was like, son of a gun, because I had Victor Hovland, you had Hatton. Hovland was exactly what Hovland has been. So he was just dominant the entire time. He got let down a little bit by Oberg in the second time they played together, which was, you know.
Yeah, but it still was a half.
No, he lost. He lost that one.
Yeah. Oh, he did? He did lose?
He lost one match.
Okay. Gotcha. I thought he had okay, he only played in four matches and he got 3.5 points. So you tell me where he lost.
No, hang on a second. He played in all five.
Who? No, Terrell did?
Oh, we're talking about two different people.
Hovland. Oh, okay. Well, I still have Hovland going 3-0-1 also.
Let me pull it up.
You want to check those notes? I got you again, buddy.
I'm checking real quick.
I thought John Rahm was the only one that played five matches on their team.
Let's double check.
Sure,
so Hovland we got in the mornings. In the afternoon, we had Hovland who had the tie. And then Saturday morning, we had Hovland. And then Saturday afternoon, we had Hovland. So Saturday afternoon, so Hovland played all five.
I'm going to have to double check.
I have the Ryder Cup app up.
Oh, you do? Okay, because I wrote it down.
Yeah, because the only one he lost was with Oberg with Sam Burns and Colin Morikawa, which was the match to where Colin Morikawa played phenomenal for once.
Yeah,
Colin Morikawa.
Yep. He did.
With Sam Burns. Sam Burns came out hot out the gates and then kind of in the middle of the round. And Morikawa took over. And I think, God, he was like 5 or 6 under in the middle of the round.
Okay. You say, so he played incredible in one match. And that's not, that doesn't mean jack shit to me because that's the only point he got, right? He went 1-3. Yeah. He went 1-3. And fucking Sam Burns went, what, yeah. 1-2.
That was the only match. But guess what? Those two played well together.
Yeah, no, they did. They did. They absolutely, and they needed to, right? They absolutely needed to. I like to see a little fire in front of, you know, Sam Burns when things were going on with the old, I can't fucking hear you, and that kind of stuff. And that's what the Ryder Cup's all about, you know. But it's a bloodbath, Matt. It was a fucking bloodbath.
It was not pretty. And I, once again, going back to the Europeans, because Rory McIlroy played great. Hatton played great. Yep. Hovland played great. Yep. Fleetwood played great. John Rahm played great. I don't even think John Rahm played great. I think he played average.
I mean, he didn't lose a match.
No, but he should have. He should have actually beaten up on Scottie Scheffler in that final match.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they ended up having that one, right? I mean, you can go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You can go 7 deep. Rory, Terrell, Hovland, Tommy, John Rahm, McIntyre, Åberg, you know, they all played fantastic. You know, there's your bulk of your points right there. You know, minimum was 2 points by Åberg right there. And you know, Lowry won 1-1 for 1.5 points. Rosie made the putts when he needed to. Matt Fitzpatrick was a little disappointing. Played 3 matches. I think he went
Matthew
1-2.
Fitzpatrick is not good in this Ryder Cup format.
He might be a little soft for this thing. You know, he might be, I don't know that for sure, but he might be a little soft for this thing. Obviously, Sepp got a point. He went 1-2, you know, but you didn't expect a lot out of Sepp. And I guess the bigger disappointment was Nicklas Hojgaard didn't get a point, did he? I think he got half a point. Yeah. But my math comes up with about 16.5 points, and that is just about enough to get that job done. That's for sure.
It definitely was enough to get the job done. I'm also, I mean, as I look at this entire thing, I'm going, man, the Europeans, they just all came together and meshed so nicely to where then you go to the U.S. side. How do you only play Brooks Koepka in 3 matches?
I have no idea. You know, I think there's a validity to the rumor that there was a mini COVID going around that USA team room, you know, because I know Ricky was sick as a dog. Ricky only, you know, very disappointing, didn't get a point. You know, when they only play a guy like that in 2 matches, he was sick. But that rumor was going around that I call it mini COVID, that they were sick and nobody was feeling good, which I understand. I mean, if you're not feeling good and you're getting sick, and I heard from a couple guys today, it ran through all the caddies too, but you know, they sucked it up and made it out there and at least showed up for their tee times. But there's, man, I don't know what to say, but I just feel like with my experience doing it and what I've seen in the past, you know, I just feel like Europe wants it more, right? I don't know. Are we a little prima donna-ish or
you know, the age old, you don't hear anybody on the European side ever talking about the fact that they need to get paid for this. And that happened on the U.S. side once again.
But that's Ogre doing that. You know, that's, and we call him Ogre. And that's Xander's dad. And if you ever met Xander's dad, you know, he was an Olympic athlete in the past, but he's a little kooky. You know, he's a little kooky upstairs. He's a funny guy. You can tell that he's smokes a lot of weed. You can actually tell he smokes a lot of weed, believe it or not. Not that that's a bad quality, but man, everything that he's saying about that, it's funny. My one comment after reading the article that came out, and I've read a few of them this evening about him, and the only thing I got to say is, it's a privilege to play in a Ryder Cup. When did it become about we should get paid? When should it be?
I feel like throughout the years, like Tiger has been quoted talking about it, David Duval, Marco Mira, I don't know if Phil was one of them that was talking about it, but it's always kind of been this thing with the U.S. And the only thing that I can kind of see is actually what Xander's dad was talking about, which he goes, the PGA of America uses this money and the PGA Tour gets 20% that goes into the retirement for every member. So the 12 players supposedly just need to eat it, and their intellectual property gets abused for the benefit of 200 other people. That's not right. So I get that side of it to where, you know, all right, yes, they are using their likeness. They are using them as the team to like sell all this merchandise and everything. And a lot of that money goes to not only the PGA Tour, but the PGA of America, and then to some charities. The one thing he did say in addition to that is he wanted it to be to where the players could pick their charitable causes as well. And that way,
which they do, they do. They do.
He made it sound like they don't have an option.
He's wrong. He's wrong. I know for a fact that they do pick. They do get to pick what charities that their money go to. And I was telling you, when I did it with Dustin before, it was $50,000. Now it's $200,000. But let me tell you something. Once you make it to the PGA Tour, and that was Phil's big bitch. You don't own your likeness anymore, right? That goes with the territory of hitting.
Well, that was his whole thing with Live Golf, was the media rights, and that you don't own any of your media rights.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't own your likeness, but I just to Live was, you know, they're making money off of us. We should get a piece of the pie. And I just feel like that kind of was a little bit, they kind of got the fire started. But like I said, Ogre is a little trippy dude. And, you know, Xander went on record. He said, I'm not responsible for anything my dad says. Now, let me tell you something, Ogre. He's got a fantastic sense of humor. He's a funny guy to be around. He's around his kid all the time. You know, he started him playing the golf. He obviously was an Olympic athlete himself before, you know, he got a very bad injury, and he's like a walking comedian when you hear him out there. You know, you should hear him and Austin Kaiser, Xander's caddy, go at it. They go at it constantly all the time, and he's always telling them to shut up and that kind of stuff. But that's just, you know, that's you want to know something? That's a dad saying something that he probably shouldn't be saying about his 29-year-old son. It's not about him. Does he have some valid points? Yes, of course he has some valid points, and that's probably something that they're going to address in the future. But man, it's just a privilege to be there and be part of that team. That's what I thought. But maybe that's the difference between Americans and Europeans. The Europeans probably take it as a privilege, because you don't hear this shit out of the Europeans about getting more money and wanting to have a piece of the pie.
You definitely don't. I've never heard it come from the European side.
No. And they just, you know, they kicked our ass. I mean, that's the bottom line. And they just mesh better. And I just feel like they want it more than we want it. And our guys are like a little bit like this.
How about the other side to this, which was the Netflix documentary crew? They wanted access. Yeah. And apparently, mm-hmm. I mean, and this comes from that article as well with Shoffley's dad.
Yeah.
He said that Cantlay and Xander didn't want the player agreement amended so that Netflix documentary crew, because they didn't want them to have access to filming the Full Swing series, for which the play, because those two are not in it. So they wouldn't be compensated, obviously, because of it. So that started a whole thing to where then later on, Zach Johnson said the team voted unanimously to keep the cameras out, preserve the actual quote was the sanctity and the sacredness of the team room. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I understand that, you know, I understand that this is not, I don't feel like this was part of the Netflix documentary, to tell you the truth. I feel like this new season of the Netflix documentary, they're heavily, you know, they're heavily weighing on guys trying to keep their cards and keeping their status. Like Wesley Bryan's going to be a big part of this one. Who gives a shit about him, right? And Ryan Palmer's also a huge part of this, an aging veteran who's trying to hang on for dear life. So that's a lot of it too. But a part of me, to answer that question, I feel like, you know, their best buddies, Cantlay and X, and I feel like, you know, Cantlay is a very cerebral guy, and I don't think he gives a shit about what anybody thinks about him. But I almost feel like I don't have no validity or basis for this, but I feel like he loads Xander's lips a little bit in those kind of things. So it might have came from him, but I didn't think that was wrong. That's a very that team room is very private. You know what I mean? There are coaches, players, caddies, and spouses in there only. That's it. Only. You don't even see the big wigs of the PGA of America very rarely rolling through there. There's a very close, when those doors are closed, and nobody else comes in and nobody else listens to, you know, what's going on inside that team room. But I can't help but think in that team room that we need somebody to get in there that's going to really just, you know, when you get off to that kind of start, that is really just going to hammer down. You know what I mean? And that's not Zach Johnson's personality, that somebody's going to get up there and lose their shit and start yelling and screaming at guys like a football coach would do to motivate, like Tom Brady would do to motivate. You know my feelings on those kind of things. I get jacked up on those, and I think that we were very much missing that from our team. You know, we didn't look like we had any pizzazz.
We looked scared day one. I mean, Max Homa looked terrified out there, and then Wyndham Clark coming down 18, which Wyndham Clark looked great. But then coming down 18, all of a sudden, there's level of confidence, folks. And there's a level of confidence that will carry you through a lot of things. And I think he's gotten a lot of validation with the Wyndham Championship win and then, you know, getting the U.S. Open win. He felt very confident coming into it. We talked about his comments last week. But then that approach shot, because he striped the tee shot right down the middle of that tiny fairway on 18. And then all of a sudden, just an absolute block cut out to the right that ends up in the crowd. Then the pitch, the little chip slash pitch shot that he had to
hit,
was god awful. And I'm sitting there going, you know what? This is actually a good thing for Wyndham Clark to know, hey, I need to still achieve another level in order to get there.
Yeah.
And
I was going to say that. I feel, you know, he made a point and a half, right? He went 1-1-1. That's a decent showing for a rookie, for absolutely for sure. But I feel like this is part of, just like you said, this is part of Wyndham Clark's learning process on how to handle Ryder Cups. Because it's very rare that you send a rookie out that goes for 3 points and 4 points. Look over the years, you know, it really just doesn't happen, honestly. Like I told you with Dustin in 2012, he made 1 point, if I'm not mistaken, and that was from winning his singles match, and he obviously, you know, 5 points at Whistling Straits, and he was sorely missed on that team. Reed and DeChambeau, I could give a shit about, you know, but I think Dustin was. How would you like to? We were talking about this before. How would you like to send Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka out, or Dustin Johnson with any of those guys, including Brian Harman?
What about,
you know, going out in the
if you had DJ on the team and you throw out, instead of Sam Burns and Scottie Scheffler, you throw out DJ and Scottie Scheffler?
Yeah.
Who's touching them?
Dustin gets nervous like everybody else, but he doesn't show like he's nervous, right? He's not, nothing phases him, and this would have been his fifth Ryder Cup or something like that, you know. So, you know, that was probably a bogey on Zach's point. Not, you know, you just can't. I don't know if I made comments in the past about this, but Dustin Johnson or Sam Burns, Dustin Johnson or Ricky Fowler, Dustin Johnson or Jordan Spieth. Come on,
it's not close.
Even close. Jordan Spieth looked like a fucking 10 handicap out there.
JT actually looked decent, but Jordan Spieth did not have it. He is not in form. Yeah. And, you know, he's been wild all year in terms of, like, just his entire game. And then he gets up and down like crazy. This was not that. This was just, he did not look good at all. And I appreciate the fact that he tried to just, you know, bring it in for that final match. And then those couple final holes coming in, he just fell apart again.
He was flipping that match on Sunday. You know, he was flipping that match, and then those bogeys. He was exposed. Can I go on the record of saying something? Dustin, we've seen the best of Jordan Spieth's golf. You know, we saw the good years of Jordan Spieth, and everybody can argue with me, but I don't see. I could be wrong. I've been wrong a million times before, but I just don't see, from what I've been seeing recently out of Jordan Spieth.
No, he doesn't have that moxie that he has.
He's too weird.
He doesn't have that moxie.
He doesn't have the confidence. He's tweaky. He's really tweaky out there, second guessing everything, you know, and he's not the same player that he was when he was winning those majors, when he burst onto the scene. You could say he's one of the greatest American players of all time. I mean, he's not that upper echelon, but what a wonderful career that he's had. But
he was on such a pace, Bobby. Like, and then all of a sudden,
12
at Augusta. And there is something to be said with confidence levels, to where he hasn't gotten it back since that time. He needs to almost reprogram himself mentally in order to let that go.
Well, he's a mental wreck. He's a mental wreck. You can hear that with Michael, with Greller. Listen, Michael Greller didn't get all those gray hairs and look this old from
It's like
caddying.
A president when they find out all the secrets of the United States, and then they come out and they look 10 years older.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. So he to me was just – he looked like a 10 handicap to me. I mean, there were numerous disappointments on the American team, but we should start with the shining guys, and that was Max. You know what I mean? Max really showed who
and
he was.
And after the first day to where he looked terrified. He
looked
awful.
Horrible, yeah.
And then he came back and became the guy for the United States team.
Yep.
That takes a lot.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I think Patrick had held his own out there, 2-2, getting a couple points. You know, I think Brian Harmon was a shining star. He looked horrible right off the bat.
I wasn't
too.
That and impressed with rallied. Harmon. I know he's your guy.
He had a couple points. Listen, I know he's my guy, but I'm going to go back to what I said a few minutes ago. If you're a rookie and you get a couple points, you've done your job. I feel like you've done your job. I mean, I'm not going to give Justin Thomas an A, but I'm not going to
give
him a
B plus
either. Yeah, I he hung in there 1-2-1 for a point and a half. Wyndham Clark, you know, I felt like he did his job. I feel like Brooks was a big disappointment too. You know, with how many points did he have with
he
1.5 points? Sam
but he
Burns,
only played in
you know
what 3 matches? Yeah,
three matches. I think he was not feeling great either. To be quite honest with you, I think there's some validity to there's some truth to that. These guys got pretty sick, and there wasn't much that they could do. I mean, Sam Burns. I don't even know why he was on the team. Colin Morikawa, I mean, I think we've seen – when was the last time Colin Morikawa won a golf tournament? Any idea? Can I say a couple of years?
I remember the collapse in Hawaii.
We all do. I mean, he goes 1-3 for a point. Xander was very disappointing, 1-3. He was one of our big three guys that I had mentioned. You know, I had mentioned three guys that I thought that if we had a chance to win, it had to be Patrick, JT – and X, you know, to get it done. Scotty Scheffler, I mean, Jesus Christ, he didn't win a match. 0-2-2 with him. Spieth, pathetic. And I can't even shit on Ricky because I know he was pretty sick.
Yeah, he didn't look so hot. I will say this. My guilty instinct tells me that, gosh, I hate to even say this to give this any credence, but...
Yeah,
there are certain guys that are made for this. You talked about it earlier. Uh-huh. DeChambeau is one of those guys. Uh-huh. Patrick Reed is one of those guys. But Patrick Reed, I'm okay with him not being on the team. But I do think that DeChambeau, if he was on the team, would have been much better than the majority of the picks.
Yeah. But remember this. The teams are picked at a certain time, and when you pop and you win, you know.
I'm not taking his tournament win as anything. I'm just saying in general that I think he could have actually been one of those guys because he's not one of just because he's so mathematical about everything. He's not somebody that folds, and he loves that environment of being under the match play pressure and all that. Like, he doesn't fold to that type of environment. Yeah. So I feel like he's one of those guys that in the last Ryder Cup really like came into his own and became Mr. USA. You know what I mean? So that's why I say I would have loved to see him and DJ on the team, and I think it would have been a completely different result.
Yeah. Reed wasn't on the Whistling Straits team. Nobody wants. Listen, they don't really want Bryson in the locker room too. But maybe you have to sweep that stuff under the rug if you're not.
Well, and how about Keegan Bradley? We could have had. I mean, if you had those three guys, Keegan, DeChambeau, and DJ.
Yeah. Man, I could jockey out a couple guys right now and put in Cam Young and Tony Finau.
Cam Young would have been in that rookie situation though.
Yeah, impossible, but I mean, it's all hindsight. You can't predict what he would have done in that situation, you know, but he's a tough man out there. I've been paired with him before. He stays in his own lane. He's
I would have liked
focused
to see Finau versus
up.
Instead of, you know, like a Morikawa.
You know, what's funny is that I came across this stat, and granted, he wasn't close to making it on points, Finau. But did you know since the last Ryder Cup, Tony Finau's won 4 times on the PGA Tour and still didn't qualify?
That's weird.
Right? And I know he's been... You know, this I'm not starting to buy into this maybe part of me does into this on forms, into this arm form stuff, on form stuff. You know what I mean? I want to go with the power players and the bombers and the guys with the egos who think their shit doesn't stink and you're not going to beat me today and you guys aren't taking us down. I think I would rather play that card than the on form card.
I think it comes down to confidence. I think you're spot on. And it comes down to having a level of belief in yourself that in those moments you want it. It's like Michael Jordan at the end of the game. He wanted the ball every single time. There's some guys that don't want the ball. They're going to tell you they want the ball, but they don't.
Yeah. And speaking of wanting the ball, and I'll tell you what, I know Brooks is a horse and everything like that, and he's not lacking in any of those departments. You can check all those boxes. But I certainly did not like the comment when he was in his presser when they said, listen, there's 24 guys here, and if it comes down to one guy making the putt, everybody's going to say, winning the last hole and making a putt, everybody's going to say, I want to do it, I want the ball. And they asked Brooks about that. And they said, how many guys? Everybody would naturally answer that, but how many guys would really want to do that? And do you hear what Brooks said? He said, very few. And I felt that was slamming his own
it
teammates.
Was. And the right weird thing there, is he's got this ego and persona that he doesn't need to do that. Like, that's not, I don't believe that's his ego talking. That's not him as a person that's buddies with all these guys and everything and trying to build them up as a team. Like, that's not that. He's trying to get, you know, that clickbait and everything. And we've seen it because he even had the guys all dress up in the t-shirts, the Smash GC shirts. And did you see that and saying making money moves?
Yeah. Well, of course, because he can't. Those shirts are going to end up in TJ Maxx here in about a year anyway. So he Ross dressed for less. He had to give them away. But I mean, come on, Brooks. You're not Bo Jackson. He thinks he's Dion, or he thinks he's Bo Jackson, or he thinks he's LT or somebody like that. And he's not that. You're a fucking golfer, man. You're going to be in the Hall of Fame. You've won 5 fucking majors. Unfucking believable. But you know, don't. It rubs me wrong, that song and dance, because I knew him before that, before all this kind of stuff. And he was a laid back, cool, funny guy with a sense of humor. And now he's got that persona, that ego.
And it's like,
Now he would have been a professional in anything that he would have been a world class baseball or football player. I don't buy that shit. We were all great soccer players and baseball players when we were 12, weren't we, Matt?
I was fantastic.
We all were. You know, we all made all-star teams.
I mean, if there's anybody that needs to smoke some Bufo and the toad venom, it's Brooks Koepka.
Yeah.
Start to understand that it's bigger than just yourself, my friend. Now, the last thing that we'll end with this, actually, there's two things, because the first one, my favorite moment out of the entire Ryder Cup was right behind me, which was the first tee stands. Did you see when they did?
Yeah.
We are the left side. We are the left side of the tee.
I did.
And then they followed that up on the bus after in the victory, the European team. They're like, we are the left side of the bus.
Yeah. And we are the right side. And then I didn't like that little, what was the song Rory was.
Oh, Mook didn't like that either.
The Americans are terrified. The Americans are terrified. The Europeans are, or whatever. I just thought that was like, I've been on those. I haven't been on those buses with the victory and that kind of stuff, but I've been on those buses before and it gets a little bit funny and guys' senses of humor come out and that kind of stuff. But I don't know. That personally just rubbed me the wrong way, but I will say this. Wait till we get to fucking Bethpage Black, because there's going to be hell to pay. There's going to be brawls.
I can't wait for Bethpage. I already sent a text. So, you know, my buddy Sean, who's my best friend, he's from Scotland. So he's from St. Andrews. And I already told him, I go, we have to be at Bethpage. He was my co-owner at Golf Pros NYC. And I'm like, we've got to be out there, because you can wear your European stuff. But my God, bring that same energy when the U.S. is at Bethpage.
Listen, I listen. These European fans wearing European shit, they might not want to do that at Bethpage Black, because they might get their ass. You know how it goes there. They might get their asses kicked. You know, there's an old story. There's an old story that we had an old time caddy here. He is since long retired. His name's Jerry Higginbottom, an American caddy, and he had Sergio when in his very early years, and he told me a story about he got jumped. He got jumped in. I don't even know where it was. It was in the United States, but a bunch of Americans jumped, got him in the corner and jumped him because he was an American caddying for Sergio. And they, you know, they don't like Sergio, and he got his ass, he got the shit beat out of him. And I can just see, something like that. I will tell you what. There are obviously Adam Hayes is a good buddy of mine. He's John Rahm's caddy, and they get you get fired up. Dewey, who works for Sepp Straka, and I really don't see Sepp. I could be wrong, because I shouldn't say this, but if Sepp Straka was, I'll say it this way: if Sepp Straka was never on another Ryder Cup team, I wouldn't be surprised. Honestly,
I'm with you with that. He looks like a softie.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, but I don't. I wouldn't want to be an American caddy caddying for a European at Bethpage Black, you know. And I'll tell you what, there's big rumors going around that, oh, you know, Tiger would be, maybe Tiger will be our captain.
I don't like that. I want Tiger to be our captain when we go back over to Europe.
Yeah, that's true. I'll take both.
Have there ever been back-to-back captaincies?
That's a good question. I really don't. I don't know. I don't know that. I can't really answer that. I'm going to say I don't think so, to tell you the truth. You know, there's a big story going around that Sergio will be the captain next year. I heard from some pretty good sources today, and I'm not going to mention any names, that Sergio is out. That he is out, and he is not going to be allowed to be a part of the Ryder Cup. And they're really good sources, so I wouldn't. You know, the New York people don't like Sergio anyways. He's a little bitch on the golf. He's a great guy off the golf course, but he's a little bitch on the golf course, you know. And you know, your people, those people of yours in Bethpage, they don't like that. They don't like those little bitchy guys.
No,
you know,
we don't deal well with the weak. That's for sure.
You know, I will say this. We kicked their ass at Whistling Straits 19-9, and they just – you know, this one was a little closer, but it wasn't really that much closer. So we'll see what happens. But I think we need to change some players on that team. Get Spieth out of there and a couple.
The personnel
other guys,
was but, wrong you know, for this I, year's team. I knew it right. And I had Victor Hovland. We tied on points.
We tied on those.
Those were
good
great
picks by us.
And then you had Europe versus US. And obviously I won that one because I took Europe.
Traitor.
Listen, I will take that all day long.
No, you were only, I'm only calling you. Listen, I picked first anyway, so you didn't have much choice. You couldn't pick
it. I was going with Europe all the way. 100%. I was going with Europe. I thought after the picks and everything that our team, even on paper, we might have looked like the stronger squad, but I'm just like, I don't see it in terms of like what is actually going to take place.
You know, I was talking to my buddy Brian Brandish, who caddies out here. He's working for KH Lee. You know, he worked for Sungjae and he's worked for Siwoo in the past and that kind of stuff. He said he was on a plane flight with Steve Sands coming back from Napa, and they were sitting down having a drink at the airport. And Sands, he said to him, says, who do you like in the Ryder Cup, B? And he's like, well, I think the Americans are going to throttle him. And Sands, he looked at him and shook his head and he goes, the Americans are going to get – here's our big – one of our big golf announcers. And he flat out said it. He said, I think the Europeans are going to throttle us over there. You know, I just feel like it's not even going to be close. And I know Sands, he's not happy that we lost, but – you know, it's funny that one of our big reporters would call that out to tell you the truth. Shit. I mean, I hate to say it, but when Zach announced those first pairings on Friday morning, I'm like, we're fucking done.
I couldn't. We're done already. I'm still shaking my head because I'm just going, how do you throw out those teams? I just don't get it.
Yeah, exactly. You come out with the power, man. Make a statement with the
you
power.
You have to.
Bring the power out.
I did end up liking the Scottie Scheffler Brooks Koepka pairing.
I did too. I thought that was, you know, strong. It didn't. Yeah, that was.
But
well,
that was
that's definitely
in
the
afternoon. I think that was the only point we ended, or a half point. It was one of the half points that
maybe.
We got.
Yeah, maybe, but it was very disappointing. All the American wives loved it. They got all their free shit and everything.
Looked like a great party.
Well, yeah, I mean, it looked like a it's always.
And then
Cantley
gets hitched right afterwards. I mean, great call there.
Yep, yep. He just got married today, didn't he? I think it was today, actually, to tell you the truth. I know a bunch of my caddy buddies are out there on the Amalfi Coast now having a good time. John Ellis, who works for Wyndham Clark. Austin Kaiser, we call it the boy. You know, you think there's boys club. You think there's cliques and boys clubs on the team. There's cliques and boys clubs with the caddies too. So they're out there living the living.
What's
the
your
high
boy
life
Micah
too.
Doing and out was, in Scotland right now? He was at King's Barnes.
Really
he was out at St. Andrews.
Yeah, well, it's the Dunhill. It's the version of the AT&T. It's the Dunhill. You know, Billy's been over there playing three or four different times. So it's funny. I was talking to somebody about that today, and I go, Billy finished 73. Does he not even want to try and get in any of these designated events that are coming up? You know, like a position that my guy's in at number 56 or number 57, who's inside the number right now, and he's just over there playing the European Tour.
He's enjoying life, buddy.
I think he is. I think it's that part of his career right now where he enjoys going over to Europe. And I honestly probably am going to figure out he's going to play a lot more over there on the DP World Tour next year too. And he does it because he'd be over here if he was really worried about getting into those designated events. That's for sure. So yeah, Mike is over there. I think they played in France recently too. And Mike brought his wife over. So good for Mike.
Some good golf over there.
You know, he's over there too. Yeah, there's some great golf over there, and that Dunhill this week's always a fantastic tournament. You know, it's awesome. The Kings Barnes, Carnoustie, St. Andrews doesn't get much better than that, brother.
That it does not, Bobby. Let's talk a little bit about the Sanderson Farms Championship, where you are this week in Jackson, Mississippi.
Mississippi, yes, sir.
Tell me about it.
well, it's the Country Club of Jackson, which is a head-to-toe Bermuda course. They have not had rain here in over 100 days. That should tell you something. They got a lot of water on the golf course right now. It's not playing that firm. We get this thing called a green sheet that's printed, and it's going to tell you what the rough cut's going to be, what the greens are going to be stimping at, and they're trying to get them at 13. They were probably at 12 this morning, even with some water on it, but it is a sick golf course. It is an unbelievable golf course. I'm not shitting on Jackson, Mississippi, but if it was anywhere but Jackson, Mississippi, you would hear about it. You would hear about it all the time. You know, obviously it's not the strongest field on the planet, but we do have, you know, Ludwig playing, which is a big thing here, which is a big thing, you know, to come back right back from the Ryder Cup to. Has to be exhausted, but he's young, you know, he might be able to power.
True, he still remembers the college days.
Yeah. It's a fantastic course. It's been hotter than shit the last couple of days. It's been in the mid 90s, right when everything's cooling off everywhere, not Jackson, Mississippi.
It's not even that hot out here right now, which I guess it's going to heat back up, but. It's been in the 80s.
And we're going to get the opposite. We got a south wind we've been dealing with the last 2 days, and we'll deal with through Wednesday and Thursday, and then it's going to flip, and it's going to go straight to a north wind, and temperatures are going to come down to the low to mid-70s and high 40s and early 50s in the morning. So as caddies and players, you'll have to adjust to that. But this Bermuda rough is nasty out here. You get a lot of jumpers. You know, the greens are – it's in mint shape, Matt. I mean, you can tell that there hasn't been any play. There's not one pitch mark on any of these greens. There's no divots in the fairway whatsoever. I feel like they shut this golf course down for a while. I actually rolled in early because I wanted to do my work on my greens on Sunday. They ended up closing the course on Sunday, so I couldn't get out there.
They didn't even let you walk it when it's closed?
No, they don't even let you walk it because they got maintenance out there, and I think they're just trying to protect it a little bit because of the heat and the you know, you can tell there's areas of stress or there's a lot of
runoff. Well, Bermuda, if you're not getting rain, I mean, Bermuda thrives on hot weather, but humid and moist weather with a lot of rain.
It is not. It's obviously not the greatest field. Mackenzie Hughes won in a playoff last year over Sepp Straka, a 17 under. I could be wrong, but I don't think the scores are going to be quite that low because we are really planning on this place firming up after a day or two, and hitting into the rough here is easy to do, so to speak. You know, the fairways are quite tight and quite pinchy, and it's a lot of drivers out here. It's a couple random other tee shots, maybe a 5-wood tee shot on a couple holes. But, you know, I think around 14 or 15 under is probably going to get it done. But I'm super excited to be back in action. My guy, S.H. Kim, you know, looks great. Has looked great the last 2 days. The practice routine and the practice with a plan and a practice with a purpose is – is back. He went and, you know, he's got an unbelievable short game, but there were a couple things he didn't like. He just spent 2 weeks in Dallas, and he visited with Josh Gregory, who is one of the premier short game coaches, and he's identified how to hit a couple how to add a couple shots to his arsenal. You know, short-sighted shots, you know, out of the Bermuda can be a little tricky. You know, you know, a 60-degree wedge is probably the most overused club by anybody, but tour pros all the way down to 20 handicaps, you know, and you'd be surprised. You get a short side in Bermuda that's just sitting down all the way down to the hard pan, down to the ground, and it's, you know, you see people take out 60s all the time, which, you know, a veteran, somebody with a short game is going to know that it's actually a 56 that you open the face up. And, you know, and there's three types of Bermuda lies on short sides around the greens, right? There's the one that's kind of sitting up that you kind of want to hit with a draw path. You don't put too much weight forward. You know, it's kind of a draw path. There's one that we call the half and half, that's half in and half down. And that's more of a 60-40 with your weight forward. And that's also a draw path. And then there's the one that's completely buried down to the bottom. And that's more of a closed face with like a 70-30. Man, whoever is hearing all this is going to, if I help your game, you're going to have to send me $500, because that's what Josh Gregory charges. Yeah. And so a short-sided one that's sitting all the way down to the bottom is more of a closed face, and you kind of stab it behind the ball and kind of hold your finish a little bit. So we spent a lot of time doing this. I will tell you, I'm not propping my guy, but obviously he's got a lot of confidence going right now. You know, he finished it 11 under in this tournament last year. He finished 13th, and then the very next week, which we're going next week in Vegas, he finished fourth. So I look for my man to have a really good week. Tell me, other than Auberg, who are the big players in this field?
You got Alex Noren, you got Eric Cole, you got Emiliano Grillo,
Steven
Yeager.
Grillo will be top
Jägermeister.
Yeah, Meisterburger. That reminds me, there's a par five out. You know, Grillo was trying to win this thing last year on Sunday and made a seven and had some problems chipping. That's his Achilles heel, some of the stuff I just described. And he made a number. I think he made a double or a triple when he was in contention and never rallied. But
wait, he hit it in the creek, didn't he?
Where, on 14?
Wasn't it on that one?
On his second. There is a hazard that runs on the left. I wasn't aware.
I'm thinking of the wrong golf tournament.
Yeah, you're thinking of are you thinking of Fort Worth when he hit in that little creek thing where he ended up winning and the ball was rolling backwards? And
That's right, because he did end up winning. So.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about a kind of a hittable par five that's got a hazard running down the left here called 14. And I think he, you know, went driver, fairway wood or something like that, pin high right in a good spot, and dumped two or three chips, and that was all she wrote. But, you know, he was in contention, and he'll definitely be – he's well-rested. He will be one of the guys to beat. There's always names that sneak up here that you don't think about that are going to play good. But I think I'm going to have a good – I think my guy's going to have a pretty good week. Man, I honestly thought when I was looking at the field and that kind of stuff, and I'm like all these – You know, DraftKings and all these guys that pick people and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, some people got to know that my guy just played really good in Napa and he played really good here last year. And I thought, you know, somebody's going to pick him. I think one guy picked him in a head-to-head matchup, or a couple guys picked him in a head-to-head matchup against Bo Hostler. But I don't think that he got the respect he deserved. And I feel like we're one of the top 10 guys to beat. For sure, one of the top 20 guys to beat.
The big question is the two-ball putter still in the bag?
Yes, and the bigger question, the bigger thing that got me excited was he just spent a lot of time last week playing with Tony Romo, and he spent a lot of time with Lee Trevino doing some short game stuff too. So he has been practicing, but the two ball is the only putter that made the trip, and that is big
news
for us. His agent's here with him, Danny O, and it's funny, we watched him yesterday. He was walking by the Odyssey bag and looking at some putters. And Danny goes, "What's he doing?" And I ran right over there and I go, "Get away. Don't even fucking put another one of those putters in your hand." And I told you I was super stoked over his House of Choi putting guy, and he's sticking to all his putting drills and that kind of stuff. He was a little bit tired today. It was very slow moving out there in the pro-am, but it's a sick golf course. It's the Sanderson in Jackson, Mississippi, so it just doesn't get the respect that it deserves. You remember Siwoo and Sungjae used to play here all the time, but now they've elevated, and we'll get into talking about them here very shortly, but they obviously had something big going on for them last week. So maybe we can take advantage of a weaker field, because the fact is, if I don't know if it's going to happen, but if my guy gets himself in contention, he is going to be very comfortable with it now after Napa. That's 100% for sure. And if he could happen to sneak a W out of here in the next couple weeks, and you know, through Japan or something like that, then I think we can probably snatch that Rookie of the Year away from Eric Cole, because he's kind of a shoo-in for that right now. You know, 32 years old, Rookie of the Year, whatever it takes. But that's a big motivating thing for me too. I would love to have a chance to win and have something really good happen and have my guy be Rookie of the Year. Man, I wonder if anybody's been Corn Ferry Tour. I'm jinxing us. I wonder if anybody's been Corn Ferry Tour Rookie of the Year and then been PGA Tour Rookie of the Year. That would be some nice hardware to have if he ever
that
buys
would be
a house.
Fantastic. Now, Bobby, who you got?
Yeah, yeah. I'm taking SH that. Kim.
I'm gonna go with the other guy on the other end of the Rookie of the Year, Eric Cole.
Eric Cole. Yeah, that's a good match. I like that. That's going to be a good match. You know, two great guys. I can't root against Eric Cole. He's a great story. You know, his dad played on tour. His mom's Laura Baugh. Remember, she was like the hot chick right back in the day in the LPGA. She actually brought sex to the LPGA tour, if that makes any sense. You know, she was super, super sexy. So he's bred to be a champion. And that's a great pick. That's a great pick.
You were talking about Sung Jae and Siwoo, which they dominated over in China. Talk to us about that, Bobby.
Well, okay, so the deal with that is that, as most people should know, that if you are a Korean citizen, you have to do 2 years of mandatory military service by the time you are 30 years old. No ifs, ands, or buts. It has to be done, right? There are ways of getting out of that, okay? Getting an Olympic medal will get you out of that, okay? The winning the Pan Am Games will get you out of that. Cage Lee has done something like that. Sung Kang has done something like that. And a player we used to have out here named Wee Kim, another Korean, has done something like that. Or now they just started these Asian Games where they just re-included golf into the Asian Games. So it's a four-man team representing your countries from Asia, two professionals and two amateurs, and whoever wins the gold medal, they will be exempt from Korean military service. So that's a huge deal. I'll tell you what, that's why a huge deal, because I work for those guys and they freak out because they see what happened to Sangmoon Bae and what happened to SYNO, right? And Korea is a little different than us. You don't dish your country. You don't take American citizenship and get out of the military that way and expect to be welcomed back in your country. You are absolutely blackballed, and it doesn't go over well. So 30 years old, you have to do it by the time you're 30 years old. And Siwoo is actually 29. So they won the gold medal. They dominated. They won by 25 shots, 74 under par. They won by 25 shots or 26 shots. Now, they still do have to do some basic training, which lasts anywhere from 15 to 21 days, which is
no big deal.
Man, I would love to have a video of Sung Jae doing basic training.
Do you think he can climb one of those like military walls?
No, I don't. Hey, listen, I'll tell you what. His body is built the way it is, but he is very fitness oriented and very dedicated to the gym. And he started doing that when I started working with him, and he doesn't really have that paunch belly that he used to have. And I can't see Siwoo doing military service. He's too much of a character. He's a little bit soft. You know, we tried to watch him some years ago. We bet him.
Do you think he'd say that to the government over there? I'm player champ, bro.
I don't think it'd be wise to do something like that. But we bet him some years ago that he couldn't do 10 push-ups, and he couldn't do 10
even
push-ups.
Even I can do 10 push-ups.
Yeah, there you go. But my six-year-old can. They're cheater push-ups, but geez, I wonder if I could. I probably couldn't. But that was absolutely the biggest relief for those two guys, and I couldn't be happier for him, especially Siwoo. You know, it was coming down to the last year. He's going to have a baby. His wife is 1 month pregnant right now.
You have your rule when a newborn comes into play.
Yeah, but I don't know if that goes with the Koreans yet, though. You know,
does he have his house over here in the U.S.?
It's got massive house.
I got a feeling it's still going to affect him. Now, if she was back over in Korea and he's playing over here and the kids over there, I could see that.
Yeah. No, you know, she was a superstar on the ladies' PGA, right? She's won numerous times on the, like, Well, you saw her take the shot at the par 3 contest at Augusta, right? When she stopped it. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I was telling somebody today, I go, I think she is the best pregnant golfer in the world. She could be the best pregnant golfer in the world. That's for sure. So that congratulations to those guys. That's just absolutely huge. And honestly, you know, that happens every 4 years. And I would imagine that my guy's probably thinking about that too, to tell you the truth, because unless, you know, there's obviously the two Korean amateurs, I don't know what their names are. I could guess and probably get close to it, but they also played fantastic too. You know, I think all four of those guys were in the top 10 or the top 12 or something like that. So that was pretty exciting.
Well, there was a little bit of controversy you were telling me about the fact that this tournament got moved back a year.
Tom Kim, I gotta tell you,
was somebody who was actually technically was supposed to have one of those spots.
So, yeah, so you said it right there. There was some scheduling changes with this. And so when the cutoff date was for the highest world ranking or points, whatever they do, I'm pretty sure it's world ranking. It was a unanimous Sungjae, Siwoo in that order. And then they canceled it and pushed it back a year. And in that time, Tom Kim had passed Siwoo on the points list. So they now everybody was like, okay, so now Tom's going to go, but I guess the Korean Golf Federation said no. Siwoo had already qualified; he's the guy to go. And I don't think Tom Kim was very happy about that. But rest assured, I would imagine maybe Tom Kim and SH Kim will be partners.
I was thinking the same thing, Bobby. I'm like, oh, the stars are aligning for a SH Kim and Tom Kim. And I think we might have very similar results to what I would actually think the competition would be if they could see if they could shoot a lower number than Sungjae and Siwoo. So there you go.
Exactly. So that was pretty. That was some more golf news too, you know. So we got plenty of golf going on.
I love
when
we get to add in a little international flavor with the South Koreans.
Yeah,
it's always just makes me feel good about you know the global aspect to the game. But let's tie this episode up. I mean, we got a few events coming up. Certainly.
Yeah, we do.
Obviously, the Sanderson Farms that we've already talked about. But then you're going to Shriners. I'm going to have to let you know if I'm going to be able to make it up.
Please do.
And you said that Wednesday would be the day, right? Not Tuesday? Or is it Tuesday?
Tuesday would be the day. Wednesday's a pro-am day. It would be tough to get you to walk inside the ropes with all these amateurs and balls
really
flying everywhere.
That.
We can't have you taking a cognizant to the dome. But Tuesday would be the day that would be great for you to walk. Would be great for you to walk with us. Oh, good news, my son. And you know, Pierre, I got to correct you on something. Last week we were talking about Pearson and Parker Cootie and where they stood on the priority list, and I think I confused you because you're like, well, they said one of them's locked. I assumed you were talking about
Pearson.
Parker. Pearson is locked at number 6, but Parker is kind of mathematically locked at number 20 also.
How about that?
So,
both brothers get on with their PGA Tour cards. That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, they're both going to get on, that's for sure. They're both really, really good, and they're going to be, obviously with their grandfather being Charles Cootie, they're going to be very marketable. The press is going to make a big deal about it. But my point is that my son Daniel called me a couple days ago and told me they got a spot into Vegas, Pearson Cootie. So the Korn Ferry Tour Championship is playing this week at a fantastic golf course, Victoria National in Indiana. And it's only 75 guys. It's triple points. The guy that I've been raving about, Carter Jenkins, is about number 25 or 26.
Love yourself some Carter Jenkins.
I love me some Carter Jenkins, my man. God, do I love me some Carter Jenkins. So I get to hang out with my son next week. And I've been waiting for this pairing with a father and son pairing. If it's ever
going to
happen.
Come on, PGA Tour. Put them together.
Yeah. Well, they're in different categories. They're in different categories. You know what I mean? So like guys that get sponsors exemptions or Monday qualifiers or guys that are back in the bus on the reshuffle, the category that we're in, get paired together. So we're in another group. But I meant like a Saturday or Sunday pairing. I could show the kid
there you
my daddy.
And certainly. So we've got that coming up next week. And then next week we also have Live Golf. Is it Jeddah? I can't say the name correctly for the life of me. And I haven't heard anybody actually say it that I can remember. But Jeddah, so they're going to Saudi Arabia. They're all flying over.
Right.
They're going to play there.
Do they only have two more left? Is it this and then the Miami tournament, right?
So this was supposed to be the final, and then everybody, there was a backlash with the players. They're like, come on, man, let's have the final be back in Miami again. Yeah. So they're going to go back to Miami. Yeah. But an interesting thing, did you see the schedule for next year?
Is there a schedule dropped, or is it just the? No, I don't think there's an official schedule that dropped. I think they're just talking about going to all these different countries.
No, there's actual golf courses, because there are. It was very interesting to see the PGA Tour influence already taking precedent to where there are no Trump golf courses.
Because I did read that, and I would be shocked if they went to. They're talking about going to South Korea, but I would be shocked if they went to South Korea, because South Korea disowned, you know, Danny Lee and Kevin Na years ago. But maybe they got somebody with some big money that wants to pull up something like that. But there you go. There's the PGA Tour influence coming in right there, and no Trumpy. And also on a side note, isn't there stories going around that the Fenway group has contacted the PGA Tour, saying that they, if the PIF thing falls through, that they like to help invest in the PGA Tour. Have you heard about that one going around?
So I haven't heard that, but they do already have their hand in with the TGL League, and they own the Boston franchise.
Well, Google that up when you get a chance this week. We'll talk about that next week. So I don't know if that means there's a problem with this PIF going on or what the deal is, but the good news is that we get to see fucking Perez get relegated. He's number 27. He's going down. Bitch, he's going down.
What are the spots
down
that get relegated? You know this better than I do.
Yeah, top 24 state and or captains.
So he is on the relegation line right now.
He's on the relegation list too. And remember we were talking, I was wondering, you know, does Brooks have enough power to keep his brother on the team? Well, his brother came out and did an interview and said, hey, it's all on me now. I got to play my way in to stay.
I heard that too. I'm still not buying it.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. I just want fucking Perez to get hammered. Then where's he going to go? He's going to be playing with you out in Mountain Shadows.
Could you imagine?
Well, you're associated with me, so he doesn't like you.
that has been stated by him two messages. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, I can hardly wait. Then what's his skank ass wife gonna do?
Well, there you go, folks. That is the ending. I know our hardcore fans was absolutely dying for, because there's been several of you that have been in the DMs lately to the Pull Hook Golf Instagram account asking for some more stuff to be said about PP, I like to refer to him as, and that crowd.
Right.
So without further ado, Bobby, thank you so much for your time, my man. Have a great week.
Buddy.
Good luck, even though we're going to be competing against each other. And until
That's
next
okay.
week, and I will let you know if I'm going to come in, because then if I do show up on Tuesday, we can actually do the show live.
Yeah, let me know. I'm staying. I get in late Sunday night, so I'll be
All
there.
Right,
keep
we'll
me
do.
Posted, buddy.
I will chat with you soon.
All right, man.
And
thank you for tuning in to season 2 of the Pull Hook Golf Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe and go to www.pullhookgolf.com for more.